Annyeonghaseyo, welcome to Afternoona Uncensored.
Unscripted,
unedited,
and uninterrupted. So let's get to it.
Hey, hi. Everybody.
Hello.
Hi there. The gang's back.
We are.
Back together.
I know. I missed you. I missed all of us together. Although Amy and I had a very good time last week.
We did.
By ourselves. But we missed you, Leah, but you were doing something amazing.
Yes.
Which, I think she's trying to remember where she was.
No, yeah. I was at a movie theater watching D-Day, Augustie's soul concert for the official 20th time.
That's awesome.
I know. And that deserves... you deserve to skip for that.
I appreciate you all understanding that I had to chase my joy. And, you know, speaking of other milestones, today, the day we record, we also hit a milestone, which I want to name, which is 200 episodes.
Yay!
Which is crazy.
I was making the graphic for... you know, posting on social this morning. And I was like, oh my gosh, we're 200. Like,
oh, it probably felt so good to type 200.
It was so exciting.
Yeah. Why didn't even like, we didn't even like say anything that I mean, it says on our graphic, it's episode 200, but we did have a comment that said, congrats on number 200.
We didn't know when we were recording. we could have looked like on our Instagram and seen that the last one said 199. But here's the thing. It's more than our 200th episode because we've done snacks and stuff like that and have called them like different things, but it's our 200th like full episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah. Let's round of applause.
Round of
applause. Yay. I know. I'm proud of us.
So today is our uncensored or, what else were we going to call it?
Well, here's the funny thing is when we talked about what we should call it, if we're trying to like kind of change the branding a little bit, and we had talked about calling it a check-in, like Megan had brought that up and I had called like the last two check-ins, and then Leah, you were like, ew, I don't want to call it that. And then you edited the last one and you called it a check-in when you uploaded it.
So yeah, it's either an uncensored, which is my vote, a check-in, which is others. It sounds like a doctor to me, but I don't really mind. I really am not that like pressed
doctor.
By it.
I don't care what we call it.
But as we were thinking of like how to hang our our metaphorical conversation today, I decided to do a highly intellectual exercise, which is I Googled what are the national holidays that fall on today, the day we recorded, and see if there was anything that kind of like kicked off a concept that we could, you know, kind of base our conversation on. And I'm doing that because I did a snack for our Patreon listeners, a plug shamelessly to that. If you want to get extra content, we do an extra Patreon only podcast every month. And the one I had to do was on tax day. And so I really just like took my white truck of doom and drove it through that metaphor and did a whole snack on taxing dramas. I'm like, it worked pretty well. Let's see what we have today that's out there that we can do. And actually, I think it works well. So today, does anyone want to share? It's a national day for two things that I think really fit within K-drama.
Cheese balls and bananas.
And if you're at home and you get that, great. You're already our wavelength. If you're at home and you're like, I don't get that,
we'll get you there.
You on our yeah.
We'll get you on our wave.
But first, before we get you on our wave, like when Leah was messaging us about this today, I said, she's like, you know, we can kind of talk about like things that we find kind of like cheeseball, like cringe. I'm like, but wait, is it a celebration of cheeseball cringe or a celebration of actual balls of cheese? And it is a celebration of actual balls of cheese, which then got us a little bit nostalgic because I Googled it too. And it showed the picture of like that ball of cheese covered in like, it's like almond slivers or something. Like it's covered in nuts.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, that type of cheese ball.
Well, I mean, that's what came up when I Googled it.
That's all I was thinking of was like the orange processed soft cheese rolled in nuts is what I was thinking.
Oh no, I thought I was thinking of like the little Utz cheese balls. They're like They're like cheese curls, like, but they're balls.
Right, like Cheetos, but balls.
That's what I like. I like all cheese balls, actually. I like the processed cheese, but I love...
I That's love so funny because today Megan was like, I like cheese balls. And I'm like, I believe you do, but I thought you actually liked a big ball of cheese.
No, I like the little balls of cheese.
But the ones that you like aren't actually cheese. They're a puffed.
It's a puffed, probably processed. Oh, not real cheese.
Probably processed. Just they're covered in orange dust.
Yeah, I said I get like the massive container from Sam's Club, which is like Costco or Publix or whatever you have near you. Mm-hmm. And my husband gets so irritated because it's just massive. And then that's all my kids eat, and I can't hide the evidence because then there's just like it like stains your fingers. So it's like I'm like the kid who like stole candy and it's all over their mouth and like have stained orange fingers. And he's like, "You were eating the cheese balls. I love them."
But when you were younger, did you eat, like for me, when I was a kid, it was Planters cheese balls that came like in the little container. Yes, we had the canister. Yeah, yeah. The canister.
Also so salty. Cheese balls will put you in a sodium coma.
Oh, for sure.
Okay, but Planters were the blue
yes,
tube.
The blue canister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I used to watch those after school every day watching G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe.
Cartoons, after school cartoons. I would watch Thundercats.
Unbeatable. Oh, God, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what? I would read the shit out of an adaptation, like a romance twist on Thundercats.
Don't even go there with Megan.
In my head.
Megan.
Because I will do it.
Oh, no, I'm not. If you think this is a joke, it's not a joke.
I'm actually writing. So the alien I'm writing right now, he's actually kind of like a lion man.
Yeah.
So the book
I was like, how are you not doing like a rum tum tugger?
Yeah.
Like shifter type thing.
I know. And I haven't done one yet. So I'm doing one right now. He's like, he and his brothers are all like different. Like the first one I wrote was bullheaded and he was kind of like a bull man. And then I have a lion man. I also have an eagle man and a wolf man and a tiger man. I got them all. So this one's lion, and it is really fun to write like his mane and how she like touches it. And then he's got like his tail with like a little tuft at the end. Cause like I have to, I'm really enjoying it. And just the fur, the idea that he's like covered in fur. It makes me want to write like a full, like big cat hero clan. You know what I mean?
Thundercats.
Oh, God, that would sell so well too. You I might have to do it.
Yeah, but they're hot.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm trying to think of a way to transition this. But do we want to get to dramas yet, or do we want to talk about just cheesy things in general that we like?
Well, I think we can talk about dramas. I think I was going to say, I have like a cheesy thing.
Cheesy or bananas like. Things that we like, right?
Right. Well, I had one that I was thinking of today. So I have a cheesy thing and I like it in K-dramas and I also write it.
Okay.
Okay.
So I thought that's what I would talk. Okay. Is that okay? Can I just
Absolutely. I didn't know how we wanted to transition. So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah. And that's why we were thinking. We're like,
are you holding a cheese ball, by the way?
What are you holding? I know, it's so weird.
It's a squishy.
It's a little squishy. Well, okay. I'm not allowed to hold a pen when we record because
no, you're not because you click it.
Right.
I'm fidgeting right now too. I have like a piece of tape. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah, I'm
like
rolling back and forth with a squishy that makes no noise, and that's allowed. But anyway,
we used to have to tell you to throw the pen.
Yeah. So I love like insta lust and insta light. But I like how it's presented in K-dramas where everything is slowed down. So it's all like slow motion and maybe like light shines on the character or a breeze like blows their hair. And it's in the perspective.
You didn't watch Extraordinary You, does all of this.
I actually did watch that part of it because I did watch one episode.
Okay.
I love it. every single time, and it's so cheesy. I especially like it when there's like there's music that accompanies it. Like if it's like that, oh, like angel singing, or it's like slow piano music, or it's like a rock guitar riff. I don't care. I love it. And I know it. I think it's cheesy. Like, I think that is totally cheesy. K-dramas love to do it, and I will never be over it. And it's not always even like the first meeting with that character. Sometimes it's like, I don't know, the man sees the hero sees the heroine like differently for like the first time. Maybe she's like wearing something differently and he's like, wait a minute. But like everything slows down. And suddenly like the character of their desire is projected in a different light. And I adore it. I'll never be over it. And it happens in so many K-dramas. So, and it happens in other, because I'm going to mention My Beautiful Man, because it happens in My Beautiful Man.
You may.
Yeah, I know I can. So that is a Japanese BL. And there is a point where Hira, that's the one. Hira?
It's Hira and Kiyoi.
Yeah, Hira and Kiyoi. So Hira walks into a classroom because this is like a high school drama. One of the ones
at the beginning.
And he walks in and Kiyoi is like sitting on a desk and everything slows down to slow. You know, it's all slow motion. And he kind of like leans back and there's like sun on his face and the windows are open in the classroom. And Hira is just like completely struck dumb at Kiyoi's beauty because that's like pretty much the whole relatable. Yeah. And it's beautiful. I love it every single time. I will watch kind of like that type of scene every time it's on. And I'll always love it. I'll always think it's funny.
I think we get stuff like that when we get makeovers sometimes too. Like it's making me think of Marry My Husband because both of them get a little bit of a makeover. Both our leads do. Mm-hmm. And I just think of that scene when, Nanwoo's walking into the office. He's not wearing his glasses, you know, right. And his hair is like
better
parted a little bit differently. And like everybody, like you just see people just like freezing, like mid, like whatever they're doing in the office and just turning to face him. And it's so over the top. And I love it.
Yeah. And when she walks into the restaurant after she had her makeover, and
for
everyone
her high school reunion. Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone's turning and look at her. I mean, I like it the best when it's like, definitely you can tell it's supposed to be from the perspective of like the love interest. Cause you realize, even like Fight for My Way, when she walks out and she's like wearing a dress and Park Seo Joon basically like for the first time sees her as like, oh, she's a woman.
Yeah.
Anything like that. I love it. And I obsess over it in my own writing. Obsess over the first like time the two love interests see each other. Like I love a good meet cute that like ends in disaster, like Crash Landing on You. It's like that's a meet cute that's like disastrous, but I really love writing a meet cute or like the first time they see each other. And I put a lot of thought into like first impressions. I don't know what it is about that like gets me. And even if it's like a second chance romance, like I wrote a second chance romance, years ago. It was called Dirty Thoughts and it was a second chance romance. And I don't write those very often. But they were like high school sweethearts and she moved out of town. She hasn't seen him. And she comes back and basically she has to get her car. I don't know. Her car breaks down. I don't even remember because I don't really care about that. Okay. I care about the meeting. And she pulls her car into the mechanic and the hero walks out. And I obsessed over this entire scene. Like I wrote the book based on this scene. I was like, what if you have a high school sweetheart who are re-meeting and he comes out. And he's got his overalls, like, you know, like the mechanic overalls.
His coveralls. Them, like, yeah.
Yeah. The coveralls, but he has them like rolled down. So they're, you know what I mean? They're only up to his waist and he's wearing like a tight t-shirt and it's stained in grease and he's like wiping his hands and da da da. And the breeze blows his hair just so. Like, I obsessed over this scene I cannot explain to you how much I like writing first impressions of characters. It's one of my favorite things. It's I just adore it. And I a lot of times will write that first impression, sometimes even before I have like the full even like understanding of the characters. Like I have like maybe an initial plot or whatever, but I get to know my characters and what they're going to be like together based on how that first impression comes out. Cause you don't really know. Mm-hmm. Like when you're actually typing, things happen. You know what mm-hmm. I mean?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. It's hard to explain that until you do it.
Yeah. Like, and sure. So the first impression for me in K-dramas are, it's always like very important to me. I always want to know what that first scene is like. I want to know, like, are they instantly attracted to them? I also, like, I love insta-lust, so I'm kind of always going to, like, I just love it. You know what I mean? Ah! So mm-hmm. I'm always going to gravitate yeah. towards that. And it made me to think that I will never be over slow motion. You can't overdo it for me.
No, I agree.
And I...
slow motion and show it, slow motion, show it 3 times.
Yeah, I don't care. Show it to me from all the angles. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I'm sure that there are probably some people, like there are probably people who are like film students maybe that watch K-dramas and they're like, this is so much slow motion. I don't care. I'm a fan and I'm saying I freaking love it.
It works. That's why they do it. They do it because it works. That's like we talk about tropes are tropes for a reason because they work. That's why we keep reusing the same thing. Like I sent you both. I literally just saw it on, I think it was Instagram Reels, like right before we were coming on. I sent it to both of you. I don't know if you saw it. But it was a few like funny, like K-drama tropes. Like, you know, if you're crossing a street, never turn around and look back at someone because then, you know, you're going to get hit by a white truck.
Yeah. Right.
But what I really liked is no Korean person in a drama can be out in the rain without getting like deathly ill.
Oh,
for just like a day. For just like a day. But I love it. That's what I'm saying. Like we've talked about this before where I always love like a wounded hero. Like I love a reason to take care of the hero and I wound my heroes all the time. And I love this in K-drama. Like every time I watch in my head, I'm like, there's no way rain makes you sick like that. And I don't care. I love it.
Yeah. I'm always trying to think about like, what is it about? Like I've tried to logic it before, which is, not with K-drama, but just like in general, the idea that like getting wet and cold will make you catch a cold. And I've tried to be like, but like how, like,
it's not, I guess it's not real though. Like, I don't think it really will.
I think it's like your butt. Well, cause like George, okay, let's get on a fun factual historical ride for a moment.
Okay.
I didn't know we were going to talk about this. George Washington.
Whoa, we're going way back.
The first president of the United States, he, and I'm saying that not because I'm weird, but, you know, I acknowledge we have listeners in many different places and, you know, it's fine if you're not aware of whoever his president was. Anyway,
right.
George Washington was the first president of the United States. We're back in like the 1700s. I don't remember the exact specifics. If you're a historical buff and you want to come at me, this is your golden, this might be the moment you waited for your whole life to will actually send. But like the gist of it is he was out on his horse in the rain. I think there was like a missing horse. There was some reason he had to be on his horse, but he was on his horse in a rainstorm. He came back. He had a very sore throat after he came back from the rain. And then he died. And he died of like an escalation in his sore throatness.
Obviously, but was it from the rain?
Well, no, it couldn't have been. So it was like, well,
because it like, have, like something has to incubate. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm like, but what I think happens, and again, doctors, again, this might be your moment. I mean, I feel like you've had many moments to shine, but this of your golden moments to shine. But my guess is that, like, you know, maybe your immune system just like depresses and like is like putting all its resources into trying to warm you up. And then the bug is like, now I get a foothold, motherfuckers. And I mean, that's my guess. It's not that like being cold creates it.
Yeah.
It's like your body gets too distracted trying to warm you up that the bug is like, no, I've got you in your throat. And
do you know who really liked this trope? Jane Austen really liked this trope. Of putting people in the rain and having them get sick, specifically in Pride and Prejudice with Jane. I just watched Pride and Prejudice last weekend with my daughter, so it's fresh in my head. For many reasons.
With his sister who, you know, catches cold because
and has to stay at Bingley's.
Yeah. They sent her without the carriage to plot the So like this is a needle to thread, but the long and short of it is I don't have a slapstick sense of humor. But I do
think established this. Like, yeah.
Yeah. But I do think that I have like a cringe sense of humor to some degree. And it definitely comes out in my writing. And I think I have like a relatively like divisive voice in writing. I've had, and I don't have like this massive untapped readership, but you know, I've noticed over the years of writing that I'll have people who will be like, I really like how you write. This works for me. And then I'll have, and this is pretty much how many writers go.
Right.
And then I'll have other people who will be like, I don't like how this person writes. It is like the fucking worst thing ever. This is the worst book I've ever read. I definitely have gotten those as well. And one thing that this like has coalesced around, I think recently with like my Mr. Hockey book, which was like the big re-release that happened, is I make a sex analogy like a candidly like a 12-year-old boy. And it was something about the fact that like the heroine's fantasizing about the hero. It's been a long time since I wrote it, so bear with me. But essentially, it's something to do with the fact that it's like when she fantasizes about who's putting the ranch in her hidden valley, he's the one wielding the big bottle. It's like a baby juvenile sex joke. Like truly. It's ridiculous. And it's something I would say to like my kids to like get a rise out of, you know, it's just like how I talk. It's my sense of humor. Is it cringe cheeseball? Yeah, absolutely. And I've had people be like, that's funny. And I've had other people be like, oh my God, this author is ridiculous. She is the biggest cringe ball. And it's kind of like, it can be both. It truly can. So
I always felt like you're writing for me. Is and like, you know, I love both of your writing like that. I think we all fell in love with each other's writings before we kind of fell in love with the person as our friends. And Leah writes with a little bit of like an unhingedness. And you never are sure how far she's going to take it. And that's one thing that I love about her writing is it's going to surprise you. It's going to surprise you what her characters are thinking. And I love it. She's always going to write a prose that I haven't heard before.
And
it keeps me on my toes.
Absolutely. And what I was going to add to that is Leah and I have done a little bit of co-writing under.
Yes, we have.
Under a pen name. And the whole exercise of writing these books that we wrote was really how much can Amy take? And we were really trying to punk each other with, because we would write, like, we would each take a character, like, she would take the female perspective and I would take the male, or vice versa, depending on which book it was. And somebody would write a chapter in a Google Doc and then be like, tag, you're it. You're going to fucking kill me. You see what I did. But it was so much fun, like, because yeah. I don't normally go there in my writing. And it was so much fun to be pushed to do that. And
let's be clear, to have it be like the chapter is going to conclude with the prince who's a priest about to fist someone.
and that was the chapter. And that was Amy's turn. Yeah. And then it's my turn.
Lock it in.
Oh my God. I was more, you know what? I was more thinking about of the face off, but
Yeah. We should do at some point, like, we should do a giveaway. I have some of those books. We should do a giveaway of that series. I kind of want to read those books.
I liked the first one. You guys had me read it. And I was like, yes. I like things that are
over the top. Silly. Over the top. Yeah. It was a thing. So, and we did it under a pen name. And it's not that I don't, you know, care who reads it, but at the time I was working in schools and I may work in schools again. And so it's good that those are, you know, not easily findable, you know, in my day job professional life. But I remember being at a conference after the first one came out, And they changed the title. Like when Leah and I self-publish it, and then they changed the title when we ended up going with Harlequin, because we ended up selling them to Harlequin.
Our title was better.
Our title was awesome. It was called My Royal Prick, and it was amazing. And I remember being in the bathroom talking to somebody like that I knew about it, and another writer came out of a stall and was like, "You're one of those?" Because we originally did it. I don't even remember what the name was. But anyway, she's like, you are the person who wrote that, I'm like one of the people. And I'm like, yes. She's like, I love that book. Like, that was so fun, so funny, like over the top. And I'm like, that's exactly what we were going for. And like, that is the thing. There are some people that would read that and be like, this is redonkulous. Like, why did this get published type of thing? Then it's not for you. And that is okay. Because guess what? Guess what you don't have to do?
You don't have to read it.
You don't have to read it.
It's like,
it's that easy. It's that easy.
Right.
But people are allowed to rant and rave about whatever it is that they need to rant and rave about. And I think like the other last thing I'll close on the cringe chapter of our own writing before we like move on is I did come up with a book title in the shower last year. Which, again, this is not like a revolutionary title by any. I want to just be real. Like, it just hit me. And I was like, this is a funny high concept. I had been looking for an idea to bring like my K-drama, like love of trope twisting into a space because it'd been a long time since I wrote a book. And so I came up with the title Puck and Prejudice. Again, I am not going to pretend here like I rewrote a wheel. Like, there are many Pride and Prejudice retellings, and there are a bazillion hockey romances that play on the puck terminology.
But guess what?
And I was that's a funny title.
It is.
Well, I left the shower and I was like, I bet somebody's done this. And then nobody had done it. And I was like, well, shit, man. Like,
that's kind of bonkers. Like that title was not.
I'm actually surprised that the title wasn't.
Yeah, me too. And so I was like, I think this is a sign that I need to do this. And so that's why I have a time travel hockey book coming out. And I think I'm just touching on the fact that like it's gotten like some fairly heated conversation happening on the internet, which is unusual for me because I'm not used to like having anything I do get like a heated conversation about in like a public forum. And it's been very divisive, like some people being like, this is funny and silly and like I'm into it. And then some people being like, this is like the sign of like the end of time coming and like the death of literature.
you did actually get that comment. No, but you're not exaggerating.
Yes, someone said, I'm not exaggerating.
Someone said this is the death of
this
literature.
Is the death of literature.
I just and I so don't
I guess that's where again like
without there even being so a story free. There's no story, there's no book yet,
right? They haven't read the book yet.
And I'm just gonna just be like, everyone, it is okay. This book is not coming to end the English language as we know it. Like, I don't think I'm that great, like, and or that bad, good or bad. This is just not going to be that. But I feel weird talking about it because I feel like I don't want to be like making it be like, oh, I've done this thing and I'm like being faux humble or faux braggy or faux anything. It's just, I'm not, again, like this is having a lot of discourse and we are people that talk about when people have discourse. And this idea really came from the idea of being a K-drama fan and watching time slip stuff. So like Scarlet Heart, Ryo Moon Lovers is like directly responsible in some part for like, you know, IU is like a modern day esthetician going back in time. Like, I just like a time travel and I've been seeing it used more and more, being like, this would be a fun thing to do. And so it started to make me also realize, yes, I'm cringe. Yes, I have some cheese ball tendencies and I have a high degree of respect for trope. And that's kind of like, I hope that even when we're talking about dramas and we're saying that they're cheesy or cheeseball-y, like I'm saying that with like delight and owning it for myself. It's like your rap. Yeah,
that's what endeared us to K-dramas. That's why we're here.
Mm-hmm. Like Crash Landing on You was like, oh my gosh, you can have all this stuff. And it can be like, yes, it can be cheesy, but in like a fun, great, like kind of like wink and nod to the audience way. Yet we're all not too cool to like be crying and like emoting and having it like change our lives. And I think that that's just fun. Like, so I think
she paraglided through a tornado.
Yes, with like a cow in the tornado.
And see,
I was like mooing.
This is part of what. So when Leah told me she was writing Pride and Prejudice and she explained the plot, I was like, that is so fun. And for me, like, again, it's extremely creative. I'm super thrilled about it. And I think it's because I've watched so many K-dramas. To me, it almost was like, why hasn't someone done that before? Well, this is great. Like, it didn't feel that wild to me. And I think it's because I've watched so many K-dramas and I that's the world that I want to. We were kind of talking about this a little bit before.
It's absolutely delightful. Yeah,
the world I want to live in is a world where you can look at the title Puck and Prejudice and be like, badass. This is going to be so fun. Not, oh my God, literature is dying. Like, I don't want to live in that world. Like, I
know.
It might be too because of the niche that I write. So I write freaking aliens and monsters. So in my little, I mean, don't you remember, guys? I wrote the Frost Troll book where, like,
oh, yes, I remember.
That was my favorite cover of a book ever.
Hold on. Someone made. Hold on. The premise, which I didn't come up with, by the way, it was like a group project thing. Mm-hmm. But the premise was that someone made a punch and they accidentally put some poison in it and everyone in the town got turned into monsters. And that was like a modern day thing. I don't know. It's wild. So this is like also the world that I'm coming from.
Yeah.
And so Puck and Prejudice actually sounds very sane.
Yes. Yes. And for many things, I mean, I tend, and then, okay, two things. And then I kind of have like a pivot to like thread it is like, one is, so this is hinging and like, there's been like a lot, I feel grateful in some ways that it's got more attention, but in like the last 5 to 6 days, I just feel like I've had a lot of like feedback coming through, like DMs getting tagged and stuff. People being really positive. Some people being like, I need a lobotomy. I'm like, not even exaggerating. Like, this is the worst shit I've ever heard in my life. And it's look, you do you. And if you need to like tag me to see that, like, I guess. Okay. But, the thing I will take like a wag of the finger to is when people are like, this sounds like fanfic or Wattpad or like, you know, all the, like archive of our own. Cause I'm also like, you know what? Some of the best shit, most creative shit. Like I was like, actually that feels like a compliment to me, but also like just like an icky denigration to the fact that like some of the best fucking books I've read in the last 6 months, hands down, have come from the fanfic space.
Manacle.
Like without even like, Manacle being one, like was brilliant. Hamardia,
I'm sorry, we would never
came from.
Oh yeah, Hamardia. Yeah, Hamardia.
We would never have had Renesmee without. No, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Renesmee is a fanfic. It is the other stuff that came from Twilight.
We would never have Anastasia.
That's right. Sorry,
or Christian Grey.
You know what? Fuck it.
Like, so what? Yeah. Like that brought people joy.
Or Beautiful Bastard,
which I loved. That's what I was trying to get at.
I don't think people realize the amount of fanfic that was ended up being published and went on to hit like New York Times.
And again, when people are just dicks about fanfic, like a lot of times this is like where people are like stretching their creative wings. This is also just where you're like dabbling in joy and things that you've like liked so much that you like want to be in this world more. I'm like, why do we create this like toxic, yucky thing to be like, oh, you're over there writing Wattpad? Like, ew, like that's dumb.
But like everything, like how many retellings are there? Like we're, you know, like, do you like the movie Clueless? Okay, because that's Jane Austen's Emma. Like, do you like 10 Things I Hate About You? That's Taming of the Shrew, William Shakespeare. Like, there's so many retellings out there and you're not even doing a retelling. And I understand that. Like, you're just pulling from that world. But I like, it is, well, it's homage. Like,
I'm going to tell a secret, a plot secret, and then we're going to move on. Okay. So is everyone ready for this big plot secret? I won't even like tell anyone I've given this plot secret. So if you're listening, you're part of this secret. If you want to tag me on Instagram and fucking hate on me, I'll see you and I'll live my life. I have my hero name, Pride and Prejudice, in the book.
Like, he names the book? That's amazing. Yes. That's so amazing.
Danielson's trying to come up with the name, and he comes up with the name. So,
well, he doesn't come up with it. He knows that it exists already. Doesn't he?
No, he doesn't actually. There's reasons for it. It's not just me being stupid. But he is not fully aware. And then she's like going through ideas of names and using the names that she had done in her real life as like the precursors. And then, you know, she's trying. I won't say more. I won't spoil it. But
I love that.
Should he know about it? Yes, because his sister's a literature scholar. There's like a thing about how he is not connected to like the stuff she does. So he actually doesn't know about it.
Right.
Okay. But all that to say is Omegaverse is a genre I'll read forever. Don't fuck with Wattpad or AMJ because I love it. And secondly, let's talk about taking this to cater. Oh, somebody. So the last comment I had that was funny was Jane Austen didn't die for this book to be written. I don't know, but I want to say, what is a drama that's either been a retelling or has had like multiple iterations that you've enjoyed?
Boys Over Flowers. Like,
all right, let's unpack it.
Like, and I see, I still haven't watched Meteor Garden, but like, I know that you loved Meteor Garden.
You haven't?
No, we've had this discussion.
It's like 60 episodes.
And Megan has never watched Boys Over Flowers.
Yeah.
We've each watched one.
Mm-hmm.
But like people love Boys Over Flowers or they hate it. Like it's a very polarizing drama. Like it's like we've talked about this. Like when Leah and I first started watching it, we are both like, look, we recognize that Gu Junpyo is a very problematic hero. We also recognize that it is Emin Ho and we love him and we love this drama. And there's stuff that it's fantasy land, right? Like we just know that this is not real. And there's people who hate it. And I respect if you hate it. There's people who think Meteor Garden is better and great. You can think Meteor Garden is better, but like, and I know there's a Taiwanese version too, isn't there? There's a few different versions. The fact of the matter is
Thailand and
Thailand version. Sorry,
there might be a Taiwanese version.
No, Taiwanese
was the Taiwanese. I think Taiwanese
was the original.
I get confused.
Okay, that's what I thought too. That's
and then
thought.
There's a Thailand F4 or something like that. Yeah.
And there's yes, a there's like version,
F4, and then in Extraordinary You, it is a nod to Boys Over Flowers because they're A4.
Oh, so, okay, right.
Like. I love stuff that gives nods to other stuff as well. Like there's somebody in our Patreon today when we were asking like what people want us to talk about tonight. There was something about like private jokes within K-dramas or nods to other pieces of, you know, pop culture and stuff like that. And things get retold and remade because they're good. Like people like it. How many, like, there's movies, like, in the Western realm that get remade, like, generations later. And, like, you love it or you hate it, and that's fine. But the reason why it happens is because they're good stories, and people are going to enjoy them again. So I have no problem with there being a million versions of Boys Over Flowers. And they're probably all good.
Yeah, I mean, they say there's no new stories. Them. It's how you tell them.
Right.
And I think there must be new stories, but there's reason stories also work. For a reason. And like the bully trope, for example, like we talked about this a little bit as we were like waiting to come on today, mm-hmm. is, you know, you're not a fan of the bully trope, which is why like maybe you haven't been like gagging to get your paws around Boys Over Flowers.
Yeah.
But like there's interesting things to unpack on like what is it with the bullying that becomes like perennially interesting for someone to have like the bright, like to have your bully fall in love with you.
Right.
Right. Like, I totally respect the trope. This is the thing, though. I respect it, and I think it has its place. It's just not one of my favorites.
It's not one that I would seek out. Like, the only reason I went to this drama was because I watched The King Eternal Monarch, and I was like, who is this, you know, god on the screen?
Yeah.
And I wanted to, you know, that was my, like, month of Emin Ho, where that's all I watched was dramas with him. And I don't seek out the bully trope, and it's not something that I love. But I find myself falling for that type of character because they are, you know, it's the whole hurt people, right? Like, that's why I love mm-hmm. Kim yep. Bin. Kimubin in Airs because he is the bully and he is wounded and I want to see him get fixed. And that's, I want the hero or heroine, you know, to be able to fix him. Yeah. So it's not that I'm attracted to the bully. I'm attracted to the damaged hero that needs fixing.
I mean, I am too. So that's the thing. I think it's more of the bully romances book wise that don't get me. And I think it's because it's so heavily on, oh, you bullied me back in high school and now, like you're going to fall in love with me.
Yeah, Yeah. That's a totally different thing.
It's not my favorite. But again, I think they have a purpose. I would never tell people that this is the death of literature. So I think they have their place. But oh God, do I love like a damaged hero being fixed? Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, are you kidding me? That's the best.
It is. It's candy.
Yeah. And I don't know, bully, like, yeah, maybe I had the most, like, I can't say like if somebody's like, this is a bully romance, I'm going to be like, well, fucking sold, like one.
Clip. Right.
But I'm probably maybe the least likely to kick it out of bed. And I'm trying to think why. And I'm like, is it because I was really bullied? So I have like some sort of interest in like what it means to see like your bully fall in love with you. Like, I mean, it could just be that simple. Like, that's not a very deep thing. I think that there's more deeper elements to unpack in it. But what I also liked with Boys Over Flowers that I think kept me hooked is another controversial thing, which is I love a love triangle. Boys Over Flowers, even though you always knew like who it wasn't like such a surprise love triangle. Second male lead.
It was still good. Yeah.
Second male lead is a classic. And I think the Meteor Garden second male lead, my whole ass is Wazaway. Yeah.
Same. Meteor Garden got me. Ugh.
So I will have to watch that sometime. I know it's long. That's the whole thing. And it wasn't until after I got into K-drama and watched Boys Over Flowers. And Leah's like, you have to watch Meteor Garden. And I started it. And I think I watched like the first four episodes. And I'm like, oh my God, there's like 36 more.
It's long and it's a roller coaster because it has everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was for both of us. Megan, I'm going to speak for you. For me, because this precluded been my K-drama watching. Yep. It was my first Asian drama ever. And I just remember being like in this like delighted kind of like manic state of like every, like every trope is in this. Like once they were like stranded on a desert island, like I was just like amnesia, like everything.
I remember thinking, oh my God, this exists.
Yeah.
How I felt like my whole life had been alive, not alive. I felt like I wasted so much time watching crappy shows and I never knew that this existed. And then you gave me Crash Landing on You, where she flies through a tornado and then meets the love of her life in North Korea.
Right.
And I was like, this is art. Like, I'm sorry. This is everything I have always wanted in TV.
They both get shot. They both almost die.
Like, they both get shot.
And yes, are there cheesy elements? Yes. And yes. You know what? I think for me, I have gotten to the point in my life where because I was a slashy major as an undergrad, like creative writing slash literature, but like I was a literature major and then, actually worse for creative writing, I was a poetry major, which is like great. But I mean, if you want to think of like, the unlearning I had to do when it comes to like when people try to like pretentious me now in comments and be like, doesn't she even know? I'm like, trust me. Like you think you're going to come at me and hurt my feelings? But I was like 18 years old in like poetry workshops and like a creative writing undergrad. Like I have been like people have waited like all week. Like we had no internet. We had no phone. Like we just waited to like fucking damage each other psychologically. Like been there. But like, there was a lot, like, I think I just go back and have like some sadness for like the faculty and for like young Leah at the time of just not even realizing that there was a permission to do like this. I looked at some of the short stories I wrote when I was in college in my like quote serious classes.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, if it's not just fucking depressing, like just depressing, just sad, just the struggle without even like, I didn't even have anything to really say. I just felt like to be serious, I had to be sad.
Yeah.
And that could be a misguiding just on like me learning my, you know, evolution or whatever. But like, yeah, all my shit is just like super sad to the point. It's like kind of laughable, like kind of funny how sad it is. Cause it's just like miserable people being miserable. The end.
Yeah, that's the way my writing was. And I do, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but I found an old writing I had. I think I always wanted to be fun and tropey, but I think that, you know, I take like advanced comp and it's like, that's not what we're reading. Like, that's not, you know what I mean? I thought I had right. to be like serious and I thought I had to be deep. But I found this book that I'd started writing and it was called Ash Breath. And it was about a princess.
Oh, that's cute.
I gotta find, I gotta read it. I
Ash
gotta find
Breath.
It guys. Ash Breath.
Is this like a dragon?
After... Yeah. So,
ooh. Yeah.
And she finds a dragon and he like tries to scare her. Again, I wrote this when I was like in middle school. But he tries to scare her and she's like, oh, like, you don't scare me, Ash Breath. And I'm like, I thought I was so clever. But the point is like, I look back at that and I was like, that was beaten out of me by the time I got to high school. That was totally beaten out of me to write stuff like that. And I look back and I'm like, how many years did I waste writing things where I took myself way too seriously? And now I'm making a living writing alien romance where I have the time of my life. And I mean, I write ridiculous stuff. And it's so fun and people want to read it.
But you're not writing it. But the thing is, you're not writing it to take the piss.
No, I'm not. No.
You're writing it like you're having fun, but you mean it.
I'm still like healing damaged characters with love. Like, I think that at the heart, that's what we're doing. But I also find joy in it. Like, I'm not writing... Well, no, I'm healing tortured characters. They just happen to be aliens or whatever.
I'm going to argue healing yourself.
Yeah. Oh my God. I love it. It's more. Again, I feel like when I stop taking myself and my writing so seriously, like, and I say that to take that with a grain of salt, because I take my writing seriously.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I don't take myself as seriously.
And maybe you feel like you can be serious, like you can believe in good craft and trying hard without it having to be serious content all the time. I think that's the difference. It's like you can take writing something kind of light and fun and, you know.
There's nothing wrong with light and fun. It still can be good writing.
And you take it seriously. Like I take my writing, like I take my the book I just did, I took my very unserious book very seriously to like write it. I wasn't just like, fuck this, I'm phoning this in. I was like, no, I want to do my best work.
I think it's all about, but I think, like I said, I just wish I look back and I wish I had known that when I was in middle school. And that's why sometimes I want like my daughter to read so widely. Because I want her to see that there's not just, like when I was in high school, I was like really pushed to read classics. Nothing wrong with reading classics at all.
But that shouldn't be all. That shouldn't be all.
Yeah, I really wish someone had shoved a fantasy, like a young adult fantasy novel in my hands in high school. It would have changed so much. Would have changed a lot.
And I've had adults even still kind of like be embarrassed about reading romance or be like, when are you going to, we've talked about this before, like when are you going to write a real book, or, you know, if I'm going to read, like putting so much emphasis on like reading as this, like, I'm like, you don't need to take this, like take your pressure off. Like what lights you up? What's a story that lights you up? Like, cause I can remember in high school, like when you're talking about Ash Breath, I had a creative writing class in high school where I had always kind of like written in high school. I did mostly poetry, but then like I started to write like more short stories. And I had this whole thing where I was writing, I mean, I guess without surprise now, like nuns who would sneak men into the nunnery and have their way with them in like my high school class. And it was like funny and kind of out there. And I didn't like even realize that like what I was doing was actually like the story I've always wanted to write. And then I got to college and was like, okay, obviously like that's all silly. I'm like, no, that was good. Like that was what I was.
Right.
And then I tried to be something I wasn't, which was this, you know, and I mean, like, again, like, who do you need to? And so I think also when I have like women, like when men do it, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like, I could give a shit, honestly. And if you're a male listener, like, it's not that I don't give a shit what any male thinks, but it's just like when I have somebody come at me from like, sometimes I'll have like a man write and be like, stop writing. And you're like, yes, man, like, whatever, dude. But when it's like women who are like grappling with like the shit of it, I'm like, just like, let's
just what,
take your, touch the grass, and then like find your joy. And if your joy is just really serious, dark content or high lit concepts, like, pop off and go for it.
Yeah, that's okay. But I also think there are a lot of us who aren't like that. And I think that's why too, I like fiercely defend K-dramas, and why one of the reasons we started this podcast was just because we wanted to fiercely defend the fact that this is where we found our joy. And so we want people to also understand that they should also find that joy and
find your joy in whatever it is. Like, that's like, you know, we say it all the time, this idea of like, we're not here to yuck anybody else's yum.
And even I feel if it's like my mister,
right?
Aww. I'm just kidding.
But I feel like that is so much of what is happening. And like, Leah's book is just like one example of that. But it's like going out of your way to yuck something based on very little to begin with.
And I think
I just don't understand. I don't understand putting the energy towards that when, like, let the people who like something like it, and let the people who don't just go do something else.
Yeah. And I get torn because I'm also like, yeah, you can just hate shit too. Like, that's fine. But I also feel like, what if you want to hate it? Like, it's interesting to always wonder, like, when you see something, you're like, I hate this and I'm so mad and I want to be like really upset about it. It's like, what's coming up for you right now? Like, that's an interesting like cue for, cause for me, if I get like really like, oh, this thing, I hate this thing, why do I hate it? Like, for example, I was thinking about how I got really upset at the end of My Demon. And today I met a coworker, and it is rare I have a coworker who is into dramas or into K-pop. And I don't wear this stuff on my sleeve. I don't like lead with this when I talk to people. But somebody was like, noticed I had like a bracelet that said Suga. And I noticed that she had like a Twice member on the back of her phone. And so I was like, K-pop. And she's like, yeah, K-pop. Then we kind of talked. I'm like, K-drama? And she's like, yeah. I'm like, what are you watching? And she's like, My Demon. And I was like, okay. I'm like, content. I'm like, reach out to me when you're done watching My Demon. And I'm like, because look, there's a lot I like about it, but I do have like this rant at the end, but in no way does it have anything to do with like me taking a dump on the drama, although it kind of is. But like, it's like, again, I have to own that, like, what it's hitting for me in it, it's like my shit. And so like, you have to like have a thing of like, if you're not liking something, it's not just because it's like the deep lesson I learned the one day where I took a shit on something. And I feel like it was like a spiritual lesson where Megan was like, you can't just say you don't like something because it's dumb like that. I'm going to like pull you up on that. And it like changed the trajectory of my life because it was like, yes, like that is what growth is. It's like, what is it then that you don't like? And in this, I was just like, well, I don't like that, like, people who really sacrificed and made horrible choices that were so hard didn't get like any reward for it. Because like, I don't like that for anyone. Like, if you've like really just tried your best and done the best moral karmic thing you can do on this earth, and your punishment is fucking hell, I was like, yeah, it bothers me. But like, that's different than just
being
like,
but here's the thing. Like it, it's dumb. But here's also the thing. You're not saying you don't like it. It's dumb. You have a very valid reason for what you didn't like about the drama. But also, you are not sliding into the DMs of the writer.
Yes. We're in our own space.
Like, it's a totally different thing. Like, we have very vocally talked about things we liked and we don't like here. But I am also not like sliding into the DMs of the writer or the actors or anybody who did anything in a drama that I didn't enjoy. Like, when you put any sort of creative media out there, whatever kind of art you are creating, and you are putting it out in the public is going to weigh in. And that is fine. Mm-hmm. But weigh in on the thing, and don't, like, I don't get putting the energy into putting harm towards the creator. That will, that does not make sense to me. And that there, I don't see the logic in that.
Yeah.
You have created does not harm me, and it does not, like, if I am a Pride and Prejudice, like, scholar, and all I do is just dive into that Jane Austen history. It still does not hurt me if you write Puck and Prejudice. It means nothing to me. You are not writing Puck and Prejudice and saying, nope, this is history. This is really how the book was named. Like, it is tongue in cheek. 100%. And if you don't get that, like, yeah, I'm sorry. I am ranting for you, like, almost every day. And, like, I'm getting on my soapbox.
Yeah, I'm ranting in my head.
But it's also, like, okay, like, when people will be like, why? And again, I'm going to tie this back to hockey. Or not hockey, fuck. King drama. Is, like, somebody will be like, why is it a hockey player then? And it's like, you know what? Because there's, like, archetypes that are really popular in this world. And, like, for example, what is something I read almost, like, I have read so many Regency-based historical romances with dukes, where it's like, I've read so many, just like Duke, fucking McFucky Duke, fucks a fucking person Duke, but right. And, you know, like, love them. I really often really find them compelling and fantastic. And so it's just, the idea is like, well, why? Because there's, like, archetypes, and this happens in K-drama. Like, we can see
Chaebol.
So, yeah.
Why is it a Chaebol? Why is the hero Chaebol? Why not? People love Chaebol.
And let's talk about that. Like, why? But why do they? And is it, like, I think in some of it, it's, like, the aspirational fantasy of when you, like, are with a Chaebol, you're going to then, like, slot into a life of, like, no worries for the rest of your days in terms of, like, financial security.
I think it's Yeah, and I think it's they're often untouchable.
Unattainable.
So you're, yeah. And the Chaebol world is not something that the average person can ever get into. So it's interesting to watch someone also reach into that Chaebol world and experience it. And then you also feel like you're experiencing it with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's, then you also just have the archetype trope of, you know, damaged rich boy. And you're always going to love, or damaged rich girl.
Or rich girl, if you're watching Queen of Tears.
we love damaged hero or heroine. We love it.
Yeah, we love it. And so I think, like, you know, it's true. There's so many Chaebol romances, and yet I see that in the blurb and I'm like, give me more. Tell me more. Because I think that's what it is.
What it is, even we have this with like historicals will be like kings or like high up folks within like the royal family or people of influence. There's, you know, that fits within the same thing. So
I actually used to read this author. Oh my God. I used to be obsessed with her books. I binged, and she writes like tons of books, and it was all like medieval times, and it was like, it was knights. It was like powerful knights. And she had a type. They were always big. Like, the knights were always
knights.
Yeah, the knights were always massive fucking dudes. And and the kings were always like the bad, like the little snivelly. She never wrote like kings. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Her name was Catherine. I shouldn't talk about her in the past tense. She's still alive and she's still writing books. I just haven't read her in a while. It was like, you know, sometimes you get really hooked on an author and you just read everything and then you like burn out. I do that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, her name is Catherine Levesque. So if anyone wants to check her out, she's still writing, and it's just insane the amount of books that she has written. Just hot, strong knights who like rescue women who are not all damsels at all. It's great. But it's the same, like, I love
knights, we haven't had enough knights as like a conventional, like, dukes have really had their day.
Yeah, we need more knights.
We have had a lot of hockey players, this is true, but knights, we haven't had a lot of knights. Why?
I don't know. I could really use some. Yeah, she wrote tons of them, and they were.
But this is where we come back to saying, like, we talk about like historicals in the West of like what kind of romances we get. I mean, Regency is the king and god for as much as people have, like, you know, and I mean, like, yes, we have not seen enough like diversity of like cast and experiences. We're seeing like a little bit more over time, but we haven't seen a lot of that, or like set in different locations as well, like outside of England, like set them in Asia, set them in other places, set them in South America. Right. But even then within like England, we got like some Victorian. And I can't speak from like, I'm not a high, like, I haven't written like hard in the historical romance where people are like understand like their genre better than anyone. So there's like other people out there that like know the historical space better. But like, it is wild to me that like medieval never became like a big deal, because medieval is like high drama. Mm-hmm. Like so much drama is in medieval.
Ed, give me like a plague book, for God's sakes. I'll read that. Oh my God. I mean, oh God,
could you imagine like love in a time of plague?
Ugh.
That's hot.
Yeah, like Catherine Levesque always wrote, she always writes these like big ass knights. And they sometimes they're like invading, or sometimes they've like had this like crush on a princess forever. I mean, I love that it's almost always knights. And then mm-hmm. sometimes they end up being like lords of their land or something. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of times they're like being awarded. But like every book, you're like, how are they going to be together? Like, it's like the, and that's my favorite. Like, you got to make me believe all along that there's just no way they can be together. And then somehow, some way, they're living in a castle happily ever after together. Like, are you kidding me? Every single book. And I'm like, this is.
Fantastic. And you keep going back for more, even though it's a version of the same thing every time.
It's
because it's done well.
100%. She writes a version of the same thing. And that is not a criticism.
It's not a dig. No, it's not a dig. That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what I'm saying. That's why there are, you know, iterations of Boys Over Flowers, iterations of Pride and Prejudice, like all of the different things, because it's an old story told in a new way. And we love it.
I do think that's why K-dramas worked for us too. Like, I feel like like if you're a romance reader, K-dramas are going to work for you, because K-dramas have so many of those same.
It's a formula.
Like, you're going to find the parts of the formula that you like. It's going to be all messed up and in different order, but like, it's going to be there.
But there's going to be a traumatic childhood.
Yeah, I think it's just as romance readers, we're so used to those signals. So the fact that it was so easy for me to mm-hmm. transition to K-drama and be like, oh my God, it's all right here for me. And now I get to act it out on the screen with like hot people.
But that's what I mean. Like, there's all these things that happen in, you know, like, again, that reel that I sent you, the white truck of death, like the things that happen mm-hmm. in all the dramas, the childhood traumas, the rain traumas, like whatever it is. But we love it. And different writers are using it in different ways. And that's why it works.
Yeah.
All right. Should we have a look at some of the Patreon? Because we have some questions that are going through the Patreon. So here, I've got one. Here was a question. And I thought it was funny. This comes from Emma, who is SOS, sick of slumps. Who says, I go through slumps all the time where everything I try watching just doesn't work for me at all. It's taking all the fun out of choosing my next watch. So what dramas put us in the biggest slumps, and how did we get out of them? Is there a specific drama you can think of that pulled us out? Maybe a comfort genre or actor? Does anyone have a go here? Because I do, but I just answered the question.
Yeah. So for me, if I'm in a slump, I watch something. So sometimes I get in slumps because I have too many voices in my ear. Like, watch this, or I see on Instagram too much commentary. So I'll pick something no one's talking about. I'll pick something totally off the wall no one's talking about. So then I have no voice in my ear. I don't know a thing about it. And I can like turn everything off and just watch it. So sometimes that's like a BL, like a short BL. Sometimes that's, I'll watch like a J drama, because I'm just not as in the J drama space on like mm-hmm. social media. So I don't see anything about it. So that's what I do. I pick something I haven't heard anything about, typically one that's like semi-short, and just kind of let my brain turn off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't rewatch stuff, but I've said before, I'm not a big rewatcher.
I don't. Yeah. I mean, like, there's stuff that I want to rewatch, but I don't feel like I have the time to do it, because there's so much else that I want to watch. honestly, I feel like I haven't been in a slump in a while, which is a good thing. But if I do, like, I give myself permission to quit a drama and do something new. And I think that was a hard thing for me in the beginning when we first started watching. I felt like I owed it to the drama to watch the whole thing. And I don't anymore because there's too much that I want to watch. And so I think giving myself permission to just abandon ship has helped.
Mm-hmm. I will say that I often go BL if I need, like, if I feel like I'm starting to head into some sort of a slump. BL is almost always going to pop me out of a slump. So it's pretty unusual that like a BL does not do that for me. I tend to also be I find it funny that I'm the rewatcher in the group because there's certain dramas that I will just go back and rewatch. Like I watched His Beautiful Man through like 1, 2 and the movie Eternal probably like, I don't even know, like many times at this point.
I know,
like,
you have.
Go back and start watching that again. I've watched Semantic Air. I tend to watch. And the reason why I think I go back to BLs too is because it's like high angst, high emotion. I tend to be like in that space of like enjoying it. And then they're kind of shorter. And so yeah. I think it's also just like the time frame, like the time commitment is, you know, I can like bust through a couple of episodes in one night. I know I like it already and I'm like happy to do it. I don't feel like I'm getting into like one of these like 16 to 20 episode, like hour and a bit long things where I'm like, you know, I don't tend to rewatch those. But I will rewatch a lot of BL, mostly because short and snappy. Let's do it.
Yep. Yep. I'm the same way.
Yeah. All right. There was another question, and then I'll stop asking questions and let you all go. But there was another one that somebody else had that kind of piggybacked on this. So let me just find it really quickly because it kind of piggybacked on the slump. Okay. So somebody said, should we have a checklist of when to drop and when to continue? And there were like a couple of people that were like, I'd like to have like some drop rules or like, you know, is there a choice? Like, do we have choices that tend to follow a certain pattern or rules? And I thought that was interesting. So like when we're thinking about dropping, mm-hmm. is it like, oh, this happened. Now I'm out. Like, have you unpacked it that far? Kind of.
I feel like I have like a 4-episode rule. Cause I feel like there, you know, when I came up with my epic 11s, I also feel like there's kind of a rule of fours for me where if a drama hasn't hooked me by the 4th episode, it's not going to. And there are some dramas that I'm like, just hold on until you get past the 3rd episode. Like I feel like some just really hit their stride. If we're talking about like a 16 to 20 episode drama, if it's a shorter drama, I might quit it earlier, but I think as a rule of thumb, I've used 4 episodes as my cutoff point.
I'm the type of person where I never feel like I officially drop a drama. I'm just like, I'll get back to it.
I do say that.
Like Vincenzo, I watched a year mm-hmm. and a half ago and I'm still like, I watched like 4 episodes and I'm like, I'll still get back to it. Like, I feel like I never fully give up. I just don't, because this is the problem. I very rarely drop a drama because of like a certain reason. A lot of times I drop a drama just because I'm sort of bored and I lay in bed at night and instead of turning it on, because I'm like, I'm just not in the mood. If I'm not in the mood, then like I know something, it's like not connecting with me, you know, like if I'm not caring,
mm-hmm.
I very rarely DNF, just like do not finish DNF dramas. Books, on the other hand, if they make me mad, I will drop them quickly. Like, I just started this book and on page 2, the character was like, I just moved to Baltimore. The entire city is a cesspool. And I was like, the entire city?
Every single part.
In 2024 of our Lord, if you are writing a book and you label an entire city a cesspool, I'm like, I was like, you know what? I didn't like the writing anyway. I'm done. Like, I am done.
How dare you come for Baltimore?
What's that?
And granted, I have a neighbor who had a neighbor here from Baltimore and it sounds great. And also it sounds like maybe there's some like unchecked, you know, like somebody recently when there was like the bridge disaster, I will say that like one of the things that really didn't land well was like somewhere in the media, like on some shitty conservative site, they were talking about the DEI mayor. So I'm just like if you're coming from Baltimore, you probably have some like unchecked racism.
Yeah, it's just like
or fully unhinged. I mean, I don't know.
True, but I was just like, even if it was like a different city, I would be like, you're going to call like Chicago, the entire city of Chicago, a cesspool. Like, come on now. I don't care if your character is. Why are you writing that? Come on. I feel like, come on. I know. I feel like a DNF book's a little bit easier. They make me angry. But yeah, with dramas, it's very rare that it's like one thing, you know? It's normally I'm bored.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's not usually like a thing. I don't think I've stopped a drama because of a thing. Like, I've watched dramas that I did not like to the end. So I don't, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just put aside Wedding Impossible on episode 10 to start Queen of Tears.
Queen of Tears.
And then I started Queen of Tears. I'm like, well, why have I not been watching this since the beginning?
Right.
Yeah.
What about you, Leah?
I did the same with Wedding Impossible. I just wasn't vibing it for some reason. It's kind of like a bit of a mystery. So the idea of like, is there a list? Now I want to think about it when I'm watching and be like, if I want to stop watching, what is it? Occasionally I can say like an easy one is if I'm not sure if it's going anywhere else that feels like it's going to surprise me. I will, even at like a late stage, be like, okay, I kind of feel like I know where this went and where it's going. I'm kind of good. Like, I'm out. I feel like I'll do that. And it's not that I need to be, again, like we've been defending tropes and all these things. It's not that I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to be like wowed and surprised and everyone needs to like, you know, be like this earth shattering new twist. There's plenty of times I'm watching like a very like, it's set up to really fit the conventions of the genre. But honestly, I feel like if that happens, that usually means it's good too. It just feels like maybe it just starts to get like the 16 to 20 episode format, I think it can be great and it can be a little bit like constricting and hard. Like sometimes I just feel like I'm like, you just had to do these fillers.
Yeah.
Because like, and I get it. Like I would be in the same boat. Like I'm not trying to like knock anyone for something I wouldn't get stuck in with too. I'm sure I would make missteps and be like, I don't know what to do here. Let's just like have an episode where like, I don't even know. They just like, claw machine is probably even good. It's just like where we have like basically scheming family scheme. I think that would be like the big, like, we don't know what to do, so we're just gonna have some more scheming here.
Land deals.
Yeah, land deals and schemers are gonna happen.
And land deals, slush funds.
Yeah, just all that kind of stuff. Once that starts to happen, I'm like, oh boy, like you really like, now we just know we're gonna get to the HEA. Sometimes I'll skip to the end to watch the HEA. But sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I just feel like my tension has like run out and I feel okay.
That's a really good point. The tension. Like if the tension isn't there, it's really hard to stay invested. I agree with that.
Yeah. Sometimes people say they're like, I just want to see the couple happy together. No, you don't. No, you don't. You want tension. You want tension. Trust me.
Otherwise, it's boring. There's no story then. Yeah. I want them to be happy, but I want them to earn that happiness.
You want them to be happy, but you want tension to get them there. Trust me.
Yes.
Until close to the very end, because a lot of people had trouble with the end of What's Wrong with Secretary Kim. And that's because the last four episodes, there was zero.
For all the HEA. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could have ended for me at episode 12. So that's a really good segue into another question on the Patreon, which is about endings. Like, can an ending ruin a drama for you? How much the ending determines your overall rating of a drama? Like, take 25/21, for example. So many people loved it until the last episode. What is a show that didn't stick the landing for you?
Well, there's a lot. But it depends. So sometimes if I don't like the ending, I really have to give it some time and think back. That give it some time, and because sometimes what I feel like as soon as the drama ends is not my lasting impression.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to 25 to 21, I was one of those who did not like the last episode, but my lasting impression of that drama is extremely positive. It's just not about the romance. My lasting impression is not really about the romance. It's how good Kim Tae-ri was. It's the secondary romance. It's her friendship, the relationships in that drama, the coming of age part of that drama. That's what I love. So it really does depend. I think sometimes the drama can, or the ending can ruin a drama for me. But sometimes I almost like forget the ending because I remember all the everything leading up to that. And I like that. Okay. You know what I mean?
You made a really good point after you had some time to think about 2521, where you basically said, if it was sold to me as what it actually was.
Yeah. Then I
would. And the ending wouldn't have upset you. And so right. I think that's part of it too. Like if a drama is marketed as something and then you feel like it's a bait and switch.
Yeah.
Then that can, you know, discolor, you know, how you see the end of it.
I just thought of one that,
yeah,
the ending of The Worst of Evil did ruin it for me. Like I look back on that drama, other than like BB, who I loved, I look back on that drama and I'm like, because the ending to me almost made me feel like that drama was a waste in a way. And I'm sorry if you really liked it, but if anyone's listening, I really struggled with how they ended that. And it just didn't. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think there are some dramas, the ending ruins it. Some dramas, no.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about this more than once on the pod about The King Eternal Monarch. I did not love that ending. I still love that drama.
Yeah, I barely remember the ending because you remember everything that happened.
Right. Like I love that drama, and just because, and it did promise you something, right? Like in my favorite, you know, episode 11 with, you know, him on the horse and what he says and what you think that will mean for the end. And then it doesn't. I still love that drama.
Yeah.
Still one of my favorite dramas.
Yeah. What about you, Leah?
I don't know. It's too blank.
That's okay.
That's okay. You're allowed.
I was like, that was a very long silence.
We're still
dead
here.
Air. Dead air.
Dead air. Dead air.
I'm trying to think of another one where the ending ruined it for me, but I can't.
No, okay. Well, I mean, like, look, I was trying to think of one that wasn't My Demon.
Oh, okay. Right.
Because I just don't want to be like, there she is crawling up like a vulture to take a shit in the nest of My Demon again.
No. Scarlet Heart. Ryo.
No, that didn't ruin it for me at all.
Right. See, that's what I mean. Right. Like, I still loved it, even though the ending.
So some do, some don't. Like, that's the whole thing. Some do, some don't.
Oh, okay. Here's another one. Where's an ending that I felt like really did ruin it for me, honestly? I feel like such a hater because we've just been like, haters. I'm not trying to yuck anyone's yum here. We talked about this, though, some on record, My Dearest.
Oh, see, I was actually going to say the ending did. My lasting impression is like all of season one. So I like think I still love it. But that's fair.
I think of like, because this is a retelling. I was going to talk about My Dearest earlier because we were talking about like retellings. And so I think season one, I find element. I mean, obviously Gone with the Wind has aged in ways that are, you know, aligned with not any of our values. So I just like always want to put that out there. Like I'm not like coming to be like, yes, this is good. But there are elements of the Gone with the Wind story that I think are like just in the relationship and the romance itself that they tapped into in the retelling of this knowingly. Like it is very much following like some of the character beats of Gone with the Wind. And when they were doing that, the story I thought was told in a fresh new way and really interesting. And then we get to the end and I felt like we just had the curse of the episodes. I think it was it's the curse of the episodes. Too many episodes. And we were like, okay, we got to do, I don't want to ruin it for anyone, but to be like, we're going to do this one choice, this one convention, then we're going to do it again.
Yep.
That felt like we'd hit.
We were reaching there.
Row.
Yeah. They were reaching. If it's okay to bring it back a little bit to the cheese ball, I said my favorite is like kind of like the slow motion shots of, and actually My Dearest is one of them. I do love the scene where she's in the swing
And she's in this like big swing where she like stands on it. It's like a tree swing. And he looks up and he sees her swinging and it's like the world stops. And it's like slow-mo and it's like the wind in her hair and her skirt blowing. And it's like, that's the moment where he like starts to fall for her that early. And it's just this like, I mean, it lasts forever. It's like slow motion of her on the swing for like 5 minutes. And it's like, yes, give it to me. Give me all the cheesy slow-mo shots of her on the swing and him looking at her longingly. And then her falling off the swing and him catching her. And they have to stare at each other for a while from three different angles. I love it. But yeah, see, I really think My Dearest is one where I look back and now I'm like, I feel like the ending I didn't like. So I feel like my mind just erases things I don't like sometimes. Yeah,
to me, it really convenient because I want the joy that I had for the first 11 where I was like, holy shit. And now I'm just like, oh yeah, that drama.
I know what you mean. I get it. Get it. Well, I think that's all for today, right? Are we good?
I think we got a lot in there.
Yeah, we did. Anything else we want to get off our chests, or are we pretty good until next month when we do our next uncensored slash check-in?
Yeah, so just, I mean, like for another plug for the Patreon, like Leah did earlier today, like if you want to weigh in on what you'd like us to talk about in our uncensored episodes, you can do that by joining our Patreon. And then we'll talk about something that you ask.
Yep. And all the links are in the show notes. So you can find us there. And so, yeah, I think that's it. Right. So embrace your cheese ball favorites and let us know what your favorite.
And love what you want to love. But don't, you know.
Yeah.
Don't yuck other people's creations to the creator. That's all. That's all. That's all. Really.
You know, if you need to.
Right.
No, honestly.
Why do you need to, though? Like, that's a thing. Like, why do you need to?
No, you don't. Like, as soon as I say I do, I'm like, that's a trauma. That's me being in my trauma pleaser space of like, it's okay. You said to your needs. I'm like, it is. These are all deep trauma responses that I am unlearning and I don't need to do so. No, just
everybody is entitled. Everybody is entitled to their opinion, but like you don't get to tell a creator that they're a piece of shit. That's basically what I'm saying.
I think that's fair. I think we can all agree.
Call them out if they've done something problematic.
If they've done something to hurt you, absolutely. But Puck and Prejudice hurts nobody. I will die on that hill.
Yeah.
I will die on that hill.
I truly did not. Yeah, I don't think it does either. But
well, I can't wait.
I want a cheese ball now.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Right? Crunchy or nutty?
Yeah, you want like the big cheese ball or like?
I want nut all over my balls.
I was just gonna say, do you want nutty balls?
I knew you were gonna do. God, I knew it.
See, we were so close. We were so close to the end. So close to the end.
Yeah, I know. This is what happens. I can't be trusted.
Nope.
Oh, God.
All right, you can slide into her DMs for that one. Thanks for listening, everyone. We need to go before Leah says balls again.
Annyeong.
Kamsahamnida. Thank you for listening to Afternoon of Delight. Where can you find us outside the pod? Head on over to afternoonadelight.com. That's afternoonadelight.com. You'll find links to all our social media, our book recs, K-pop and K-skincare recs, and if you want even more Afternoon of Delight, because really who doesn't, you can join our Patreon, where you can choose the patron level that's right for you. Join in daily K-drama conversations, listen to bonus podcast episodes just for patrons, and participate in our monthly live K-drama support group via Zoom. We can't wait for you to be a part of the community. Until next time, annyeong!